appreciate the opportunity to come before you again to continue a positive presentation of my beliefs. As I stated at the onset, my purpose in this is not to seek to answer arguments. Apparently, Pat perceives in a little bit different way. I did not bother keeping count, but I believe most of his speech was in reference to things, not things that I said today, but things that I wrote. If Pat wanted to review what I wrote, I already talked to the editor of Faith and Facts, and that publication, the pages are open to him to review that. We'll say up front, too, that there was something that I learned myself that I think is very informative, at least to me. I did not realize until Pat brought this up the deep connection that brethren of his persuasion have between their attempt to bind the covering on women today in 1 Corinthians 14. I think he made that connection very clear. I have no intent to discuss at this current time the covering, simply because in most places that I work, at least, it is a settled issue. The last time I had any occasion to discuss it all with brethren was almost 30 years ago. I haven't run into much problem. Most folks that I work with, some believe it, and they keep that to themselves and practice it as a private thing. I don't believe it is binding, and we keep that to ourselves, and we get along just fine. The reason I got into a discussion of 1 Corinthians 14, initially and through the years, had absolutely nothing to do with the covering issue. I have brethren and sisters who were seeking, I believe, to unnecessarily restrain women. And I appreciate what Pat had to say, that he would not take this to the point of saying that women cannot speak in the Bible class. He is unusual in that. Most that I have encountered who say it applies today, that's the first place they want to go. Say a woman has to keep her mouth shut in the Bible class, and they want to talk there. That's where I've got into this thing and discussed this thing and developed this through the years. Any reference to 1 Corinthians 11 and the covering is incidental in my mind. It's a mute point. The other thing I would like to clarify, and this isn't in my material, so I need to clarify it here. Pat made a great deal about just preaching the sermon. I don't want anybody to go away thinking the key says a woman can do anything she wants to in the assembly as long as she doesn't preach the sermon. No way. I believe 1 Timothy 2 forbids a woman from taking any sort of leadership role in the assembly. That would include, and I may overlook something here, and if you want to add something to it, you believe it would be a leadership role, we'll talk about. That would include preaching the sermon. That would include making the announcements. That would include leading the singing. That would include waiting or presiding at the Lord's table. That would include leading the prayer. All of those are included in what I believe would be prohibited to women in 1 Timothy chapter 2, much more, obviously, than just preaching the sermon. Yes, I would say that's wrong, but any sort of leadership role. I'm simply affirming that as long as a woman does not take a leadership role, she can participate in assemblies, and I intend to go ahead and pursue that train of thought for the rest of the time that I have. Some of this will probably sound kind of familiar. Pat already introduced a lot of it his review of articles there in Faith and Facts, and like I said, I'm not sure if he didn't want to present a positive presentation of his particular beliefs and just wanted to review mine, then I don't think we need to have taken this time today, and I needn't have drove all the way over from Ohio, and Paul Blake didn't need to take his time out to get me here, and so forth. Those pages are open, and he could do that. I will just continue, though, and present it in a positive way. What I do believe, the evidence for a limited application of 1 Corinthians 14, 33 through 35 comes from three areas. The overall context of the verses themselves, the text itself, and the other scriptures. The whole of the New Testament context would argue that the application has to be limited. The first thing, and this is just kind of a segue, like I said, I didn't really intend to get into the covering a whole lot, but it does have some application and something we need to look at. And that is, if I understand 1 Corinthians 11 correctly, and I have not studied, I will be honest with you, for some 30 years. And if I were to do a restudy, I might change some of the things I do believe. But based on my current understanding, I believe in verses 4 and 5 of 1 Corinthians 11, Paul specifically authorizes women who have the miraculous spiritual gift of prophecy to exercise that gift, as long as she wore a symbol of authority on her head. This is kind of interesting. As I reviewed the different positions on this, the brethren who favored women wearing the artificial covering day usually tried to limit 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16 to the assembly. I have noticed some, and I do not know where Pat comes down on this, and I'm not going to say one way or the other since I don't know, but I have observed normally as I've been around brothers and sisters that if a praying or teaching or other type situation occurs outside of the assembly, the women will not wear the covering. If it's in the assembly, they will. And so they say it's limited. Brethren who favor that, them wearing it, usually try to limit it to the assembly. And those who advocate the limited application of 1 Corinthians 14, 33 through 35, like myself, usually try to exclude the assembly from consideration in 1 Corinthians 11. A pox in both your houses. I think they're both wrong. The context of 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, I don't believe gives any indication that Paul's teaching is either limited to the assembly or excluded from it. Thus, I believe prophetesses could exercise the miraculous spiritual gift in the assembly, providing she wore the covering that Paul commanded in 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16. And we could probably discuss a long time exactly what that covering would be. So, bottom line, that the instructions out of 1 Corinthians 14, 33 through 35 could not have included all women at that time, since some women were authorized to speak in the assembly. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 provides limitations on the types of assemblies. I'm not going to take a lot of time on this, since Pat and I do agree on both of these, but it was a time when the whole church was assembled. Verse 23, the whole church comes together. A second point, and we did notice these earlier, I believe, verse 26, specifies that in these assemblies, miraculous spiritual gifts were in use, and again, I think we are in agreement, so no need to belabor that a whole lot. Thus, primarily, the instructions, verses 33 to 35, could not, would not apply to any assembly where the intent is not for the whole church to assemble, or where miraculous spiritual gifts cannot be exercised. Specifically, they do not apply to most of our Bible classes today. They apply to none of our general assemblies today. Unless we align ourselves with the charismatics and start talking in tongues, then we might have a point there. And then to the text itself under consideration, and I guess I'll have to sidetrack a little bit here and deal a little bit with what Pat had to say on this. Again, he's getting a little ahead of me, and that's fine. I guess if he wants to present my material for me, I'll just present it again, and you can get a double dose of it. Verse 35, if they desire to learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home. Pat said, well, I agree, at home is general. Why can't we just make their husbands general? Because we can establish from other scriptures that at home is a general phrase. We find, 1 Corinthians 11, he went there as well as I did, that he said, let them eat outside the assembly. He said, let them eat at home. I'm not going to take the time to do this. I think most of us would be familiar, if you turn through your New Testament, you would find people eating a lot of different places besides at home. And so obviously, by the rest of the scriptural revelation, we'd have to understand that that would be a general statement. Where's the information that says their husbands is a general statement? It's very specific and direct language in the text itself. And now to move specifically and to present positively what I want to say, that limits then the women to those who had husbands at home. These instructions could not be applied to women who did not have husbands. Specifically, single women, widowed women, divorced women would not be under consideration. Only those women who had husbands at home. Second, it would apply to those only who had husbands they could learn from. It says to ask their own husbands. Today, if we were going to try to put this into a day situation, this then would limit it to those women who had husbands who were Christians. A woman who had a husband who wasn't a Christian, obviously he would not be qualified to teach her about the things a Christian would need to know. And so she couldn't ask him. I believe in the first century it also eliminated some women, at least, whose husbands were Christians. Since the complete written revelation of God was not yet available, only those men who had the miraculous spiritual gift of prophecy could be relied on for spiritual information. A woman whose husband did not have this gift could not have properly answered her question. And so we have it very limited and contextually. And by process of elimination, I believe we must identify the women of verse 34. The wives of the prophets addressed in verses 29 through 32. It's not a matter of translation where the King James and the New King James get the translation, "your women." It is a matter of the text that's being used. The older style of text that was relied on for the older translation, such as the King James, which has been reused by the New King James, has the phrase, "the women of you." And that's awkward English, so the correct English wording of that is, "your women." And so that textual tradition, if accurate, and I'm not going to argue a whole lot on that, like Pat said, we perhaps could even agree, and I could concede his point on this, and we still have some more to discuss. But it seems like it's pretty specific. He's talking about the specific women that belong to a specific group of men, and the men in that context are the prophets. But I want to move on. I want to take a couple of minutes and have some time to deal with where the real problem lies. Like you said, really, we might could agree on this to some extent. But what we need to come down to, and just get into it, and this is really where Pat came down to at the end of it, and this is where I want to spend the majority of the time here. Does the statement, "it is a shameful thing for a woman to speak in the assembly," reveal a general principle binding on all women for all time? Some will grant, and we can argue back and forth about who these women are, but some will say, and I believe I understood Pat correctly, this is what he is saying, that this is the general principle that Paul is reasoning from. And this is the general principle. They basis this direct application of certain women at Corinth and say that it's still a shame for women to speak in the assembly. What I want to do in the time remaining is simply ask the question and hopefully from the scriptures answer it. Was it, generally speaking, was it a general rule that was a shame for women to speak in the assemblies in the first century? And I've got to throw it out again. I want to just make myself as crystal clear as I can where I'm coming from on this. I'm not saying speak in the sense of take a leading role and make announcements or lead a prayer or preach a sermon or something like that, but simply to confess Christ, confess their sins, ask a question, participate in a discussion that a man is leading. Was it a general principle? It was a shame for a woman to make a vocal sound, perhaps is the way to paraphrase that, in the assembly. And the total context of the New Testament answers a definite no. The apostles did not recognize that as being a general principle in New Testament times. I don't see why we would need to recognize it as being general today. First of all, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19, a passage that most of us are very familiar with, we have the command of Paul speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody your heart to the Lord. I believe Colossians 3 and verse 17 is very similar to that. Verse 16, that is very similar to that. Now, as we look at this verse, I'm going to proceed on some assumptions, and I hope they're valid assumptions, and if they're not, perhaps in the open forum we'll have some time to clarify them. But brethren, generally accept the fact that this command, A, applies to both men and women, and B, is neither limited to nor excluded from assembled worship. I believe this position can be substantiated by the text and by the context, but for sake of time, I'm not going to do that. If he is disinclined to accept it, as I said, we'll try to deal with that some in the open forum. What I do want to point out is that the word for speaking, Ephesians 5:19, first part of the verse, is the same word for speaking that is used in 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35. The questions that I have, I think, need to be answered. First of all, did Paul command the sisters at Ephesus to do what he forbade the women at Corinth to do. In other words, let's get down as simple and as seriously as we can. Was Paul lying when he said, I teach the same thing everywhere in every church? Did he go over to Corinth and say, the women cannot speak in the assembly? It's a shame for them to do that. And then go over and write and tell the Ephesians, men and women, you speak to one another. As I said in the onset of the earlier one, I admire some brethren. They are consistent. I believe they're consistently wrong, but they are consistent. They would say, yes, the command to speak in singing does not apply to women. Women cannot sing in the assembly. I don't believe Pat would go that far, but I know some have gone that far. I believe consistently you have to go that far. The second question is just a little bit, worded a little differently, the points of Saint Saint. Did Paul expressly allow the ladies at Ephesus to do what he told the women at Corinth was a shameful thing? And say, it's all right for you to speak in the assembly, but then tell the women at Corinth, it's a shame for you to do it. I don't believe Paul spoke with a forked tongue. I don't believe he told untruths. I believe to ask these questions implies a negative answer to both of them. An affirmative answer may call a liar, a hypocrite, to say nothing of the spirit that inspired him. Again, I would call to your mind the Paul Quain, 1 Corinthians 4:17, to teach the same thing everywhere in every church. Let's look at another one. Let's look at Acts chapter 5. And we'll see that we have an approved apostolic example of a woman speaking in the assembly. Before we look at this, I'm going to have too much of this up here at one time. Let's begin by just looking at the background in Acts 5 and verses 1 through 11, that it is an passage that records an assembly event. Some have disagreed on this. I believe that if you're going to maintain the uniformity and the conformity of the gospel revelation, you will have to conclude that what happened in Acts 5, 1 through 11 happened in the assembly. As a background to this passage, remember that 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 limits the taking up of a collection to a first day of the week assembly of the church. And again, as on Ephesians 5:19, there's a lot of strange stuff going on out there today. And I have had some who've challenged what they call a traditional understanding of the passage. Again, to conserve time and space, I'm not going to defend this position at length. Again, perhaps if you want to clarify that and talk about it, we'll have an opportunity for question and answer in the open forum. Now, with that as a background, let's understand from verse 2 of Acts chapter 5, now, these events occurred while they were taking up a collection. Verse 2 says that Ananias is the one speaking. They kept back some of the price from selling with his apostles' full knowledge and bring up portion of it. He laid it at the apostles' feet. They were taking up a collection. They were not doing it as we perhaps traditionally do it today, but still they were gathering money. They were collecting funds for the work of the church. They were laying at the apostles' feet. If you go back into chapter 4, verses 34 and 35, verse 35 especially, the apostles then would distribute this to each as he had need. They were contributing funds for the work of the church in the realm of benevolence. That contribution had to take place on the first day of the week, according to 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Or else, Paul's claim in Galatians 1 to preach the same gospel, I think maybe chapter 2 as well, as the other apostles, is negified. They taught the same thing. And so we learn from that. Now, let's make the application. Let's look at verse 8 in chapter 5, where Peter responds to Sapphira. Ananias has been struck dead. They carried him out and buried him. A little while later, his wife comes into the assembly, doesn't know apparently what has happened. Verse 8, Peter responds to her, tell me whether you sold the land for such and such a price. And she said, yes, that was the price. To me, this, if nothing else, is the death blow. To those who try to make a general application, that is always a shame for women to speak in church, because look at the situation. Did Peter ask Sapphira to do What Paul told the women at Corinth, it was a shameful thing for them to do. Are we going to get in bed with a modernist who says, well, Peter and Paul are always fussing and fighting and never quite agreed with each other? Are we going to agree that the same Holy Spirit that inspired Peter inspired Paul? If we are, then we're going to have to agree that it's not always a shame for a woman to speak in church. Here's a specific example where an apostle asked a woman to speak and a woman spoke. So did Peter ask her to do what Paul told them was a shameful thing? Did he expressly command Sapphira to do what Paul forbade the women at Corinth to do? I don't believe so. This is just for benefit. If someone's going to maintain it's always a shame for women to speak in the assembly, and just asking the questions. And I think for Bible-believing people to ask such questions is to answer them. Back to our context in 1 Corinthians 14:33, God's not the source of confusion. His Spirit does not speak with forked tongue. And so we need to harmonize and get all the information God has given us on this as well as other subjects. I believe we must conclude based on evidence such as this. The apostles did not recognize a general principle that was a shame for women to speak in the assembly. I believe the shame involved in 1 Corinthians 14:35 was specific to that situation. When the women would interrupt the men who were speaking and disrupt the assembly, such conduct violated the general principle of order. Verses 33 and 40 was improper. I'm convinced that such conduct remains a shame and reproach for men and women today, and that is the general application there. Rodney, how am I doing on time? No, I won't need it. Thank you very much. I believe we have to look then, conclusion, the testimony, the immediate context of 1 Corinthians 14:33 through 35, the information of the verses themselves, and the teaching of the rest of the New Testament. All unite, all come together to tell us the application of the directives that are contained concerning women in 1 Corinthians 14:33 through 35 must be specific, must be limited, they are not general and universal. And since I have a little time, I'm going to hit one more lick, and I want everybody to know exactly where I'm coming from. Am I opening the door for women to preach, lead singing, take a leading role in our assemblies? No. If Pat were to sign a debate with someone to debate that issue, I'd second it. We're in total agreement on that. We have a disagreement as far as opinion about the application of a particular passage. It should not, and I hope will not, ever affect fellowship. We can resolve this on an individual basis between individuals and God. And I believe that's where it needs to stay. We're not talking about leadership roles for women in the assembly. If that were so, Pat and I'd be on the same side of this thing. And we'd stand together. We're just saying, and he said very well at the beginning of his, we're just saying what scriptures will we use to teach that. And I will say again what I said in the beginning. It is easy. It is easy to find a passage that says what we want to say. And take that passage without looking at the context and considering what the context has to tell us and use it. We need to be sure that we are diligent in our study and make sure that we handle accurately the truth that God has given us. Thank you again for your time and appreciate the opportunity to be with you. Thank you.
We're going to try to get on this concludes Keith's second session of speaking. You may stop the tape at this time. Turn over and hear Pat's second session. Stop the tape at this time.